This is episode 58 of the Wildlife Photography Podcast. In this episode, walking safaris and wildlife photography. Hi everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from Wild Eye, and the topic for this episode comes from a question I asked you guys on my Instagram and Snapchat feeds yesterday. So, in between the day, I haven't been posting as much as I normally do or would like to, purely because of workload currently. We're going into migration season. My hectic travel schedule starts a week from today, next Friday. And the content and sharing online has been a bit less than usual. But I asked you guys yesterday for a topic for the podcast, for this episode. And there was a couple of interesting ones. But the first one that came up, and it was actually one that's been on my list for a while, was from Chetan on Snapchat, and he, ballpark, asks the following. Can we do a detailed walkthrough about on-foot safaris? Sleeping in the open, safety, how grueling it is, recharging batteries, food options for vegetarians and such. And then also, the guns you carry, does it guarantee safety? The safari thing is something I like to keep on obsessing about, so I like that. Walking safaris and wildlife photography, how do they work together or not work together in some cases? So for those of you that have been on a walking safari, so a walking safari, just for those of you that have not been, is basically when you go on foot in a big five or a dangerous game area. The idea is not, and this is where a lot of people make the mistake, walking safaris are by default not about the animals. I'll say it again, walking safaris are not about animals. Sometimes you can go on foot 2, 3, 4 hours and not see a single animal. The reason is, I mean, we think we're being all quiet when we're walking in the bush, but we might sound like a herd of elephants. That's a bad analogy because elephants move quite quietly, but you know what I mean, is we are not designed to walk slowly and quietly through the bush. These animal senses are so attuned that they hear you coming, smell you coming, see you coming from miles off, even before you know they're there. So the idea of going on a walking safari specifically to see animals and to photograph animals is not always correct. That said, there are areas where you can work it in your favor and that you can get close to these animals. So the first thing you need to understand about walking safaris is you're not always going to see as much game as you will from a vehicle. It's just one of those things. The walking safari experience is a lot more about getting into nature and kind of, I want to say, feel vulnerable, even though it's not that dangerous. Feel vulnerable without the safety of the vehicle and kind of really get in touch with what it's like to be out there. It's about finding tracks. It's about looking at nests, at fallen over trees, the little ecosystems that happen there, insects, whatever the case might be that you find there. But it's more about the smaller things and then the bigger picture of being out there. So it kind of pulls at both sides. It's about the small detail and the bigger picture. So yes, you do see animals on these things, but if you're into pure wildlife, and I'm going to contradict myself in a little while, if you're into pure wildlife photography, your better bet is to stay in a vehicle because the animals don't react as they would to us. In a vehicle, you can get much closer and you can then get a lot more and wide diverse range of images. Okay, so wildlife photography then when you go on foot. So think about this now. If you're in a vehicle and you're photographing with a 3, 4, 5, 600 millimeter lens, if you go on foot, the chances of you getting close to animals, and again, I'm going to contradict this in a little while, is not as good. So you're going to want that big glass. However, you're now going to have to carry it. So a lot of people would, for example, opt for a monopod or a tripod, but then you're going to carry that with you as well. It does become hard work. And if you're going to go on a 2, 3, 4, 6 hour hike with your camera gear, you're going to know about it. I mean, I'm just thinking, for example, hiking gorillas. It's slightly different, but you're still on foot. And carrying a backpack for 3, 4 hours, granted it's uphill more, but it's a lot of hard work. And now think of this. Let's say you do find an interesting sighting, like rhino, for example, on foot, white rhino, you can view quite comfortably and quite close up, but you're then going to have a backpack, you're going to put it down, you're going to shoot with your 300 mil, you're going to realize, hey, I want to get a wider shot, like a 24 mil, change that. Now, the rhino moves, you want to move with it, you've got to pack your bag up. It becomes a mission. So unless you're very well prepared, then it's going to be tough. I'm going to just inject here is that if you're going to do walking, something like, I think it's called the Moneymaker from Hold Fast. It's the one that Marlon and I use on safari, where it straps over you, almost like a jacket that you put on, but it's just the leather straps, and you can hang a lens on each side. That is a lot more useful than taking a backpack on safari, but that's just a different note. So the idea of carrying your gear is something you're going to have to kind of reconcile with yourself. Is it worth the images you're going to get? Just this morning, funny enough, someone on Snapchat sent me a picture. They're going hiking in Australia, 65 kilometers over 5 days or something. So it seems like a lot of fun, beautiful environment. And the one person on the trip brought about 35 kilograms worth of photography gear they're going to track along. Now, they're expecting, they're not going to see Big Five. They're doing a lot of landscape stuff. I don't know what the hell this guy's planning to photograph with 35 kilograms worth of landscape gear, but hey, kudos to him. Good luck. Okay, so back to Africa. Is the carrying of the gear is the one side of it. Now, the big argument that a lot of people make for going on foot is they want to get a better angle. They want to get the lower angle. So that's great, and there are instances in where that makes sense and it is a viable kind of discussion. Just before we look at that, do you guys realize a lot of the times on safari, people have, let's average it out at 300 mils. People have like a 70 to 300, some people have 200, 400, but so let's even it out at 300 mil. People always want to get closer. So now think about this. The animal's on the floor, you sitting either in your own vehicle if you're doing self-drive or on the back of a game drive vehicle, which is a little bit higher. You pull up close, the angle that you're shooting down at the animal is enhanced because you are so close. So if you can't go on foot in any given area, or you want to make it seem like you have closer to a eye level angle as possible, back up your vehicle, pull away from the animal, and use your longest telephoto lens. That angle, but the distance between you and the subject and the angle you're shooting out starts looking a lot more like eye level and a very lower angle than when you're up close. So this idea of how close can I get, how close can I get, from a photography point of view, it doesn't always work. And it is sometimes a better option on a vehicle to hang further back, use the telephoto lens and that perceived angle that looks less when you shoot from distance on a vehicle. Okay, so back on foot, on foot you can get lower angles, right? So it'll also depend a lot on the topography. What you must think of is when you go on foot, it's the undulating kind of rolling hills of any landscape. Very few of the places you'll work on, well, you're working on your photography, where you'll be walking is completely flat. So you're still gonna get these rises up and down. So a lot of the times what you're gonna find if you're photographing from foot, if you're on the same level as the animal, if you're not aware of this, is you're gonna start chopping animals' feet off. Think about it. If you're at the same level and the animal's just on a slightly downhill from you, you might chop his feet off. So then you've got this lovely angle, but you've got a three-quarter legged elephant. Okay, so it's just something to consider. People always look for the things, ooh, I'm gonna get lower angle and it's all great, but they don't think of the actual reality of shooting there. Yes, you can get great images, but it's not all as easy always as you think. Now, I'm gonna try and jump between being a wildlife photographer on foot, being a specialist photographic guide on foot. I remember one instance. This must be about, what are we now, 2017? Somewhere 2010, 2011, Grant Marcus, very good friend and a wildlife guide. We were in Madikwe on our own, so we didn't have guests. I was still guiding full-time in the park. And we didn't have any guests on this particular morning. So we went with our cameras, we had a coffee, and off we go. It's golden to have, I don't get time in the field for myself, just for myself often. And to just shoot for yourself is great. So anyway, we head down to the western corner of Madikwe, close to where the airstrip is. And we find tracks of two lions. At the time, they were called the Naledi brothers. I think they're both dead now, a long time ago. Beautiful animals. We've walked into them many, many times on foot. So we're in the vehicle. We find their tracks. We see them walking down a road. So we go, we follow them, and we kind of go around them off-road and down so that we can get a front shot. So picture this for me. The road goes down, 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 kind of slightly downhill, and then it makes a sharp turn to the right. So we go past these animals. We go off-road at the corner, turn the vehicle around off-road so that the road then curves just in front of the vehicle. So the idea is they're walking downhill towards us, and just when they get to the front of the vehicle, they're going to follow the road, which they will because it's an early morning winter. They're not going to walk through the dew and the grass. That's why they stick to the road. They're going to stick to the road and then hug, literally come in front of the vehicle and then walk off to our left as we're looking at them. Okay, so this is cool. Just Grant and myself, we're both qualified guides. We've got a lot of experience, and we are doing... We're not taking chance. Okay, maybe a little bit of a chance. No, we're not. Okay, yes, we were. No, Jerry, move on. Okay, so as these animals come down, we get a couple of shots and we think, so I'm in the passenger seat now. The vehicle's facing these animals. They're about 100 meters from us. So we open the doors of the game drive vehicle and we pop out onto the floor, and you kind of peek just off to the, I'm just past the left of shooting now at eye level. The road is slightly going uphill. We're photographing these things, Grant on the other side. So I started on 200, 400, filling the frame, zooming back and so on and so forth. Beautiful shots. And then as they come closer, you go to a 70 to 200. The one thing you must remember when you photograph things on foot is that they are closer than you think they are. So as this thing came walking down towards us, this big male lion, I'm zooming back, I'm zooming back, I'm zooming back. Suddenly I realize, holy shit, I've gone from 400 to 70 mils. And when I drop the camera down, this thing is no more than like 7-8 meters in front of us. So I'm kind of half hidden behind the door. This cat walks down, looks at me briefly, obviously hold still, don't run, don't do anything. And he just walks right past. And I just didn't move from there because I didn't realize how quickly he came closer, because the perception you have through your lens is very different. So it's not something I would do with any group of guests, maybe on a private guided trip. Those kind of experiences, we can't arrange it because it's wild, but we can put ourselves in situations where we get that kind of photography in a safe manner. Discussion for another time. Anyway, so when you're on foot, the point of that little story is when you're on foot is you must understand that your perception of the world around you is very different. I've seen people walk with a wide angle in monopoles, for example. They're walking through a wide angle, composing as they walk, and then they fall over something. You damn idiot. Obviously, everything that you see through a viewfinder on a wide angle is pushed further away. On a telephoto, it's pulled closer in. So you can't walk around with the camera stuck to your head and then photograph from there. So from a guest's point of view, this is something to keep in mind, is you need to be very, very aware. And if you have a good guide with you, they will manage it for you and kind of advise you when to and when not to. But be aware that what you're looking at through your camera when you're on foot, the awareness factor needs to be there. It goes back to the episode a couple ago when I talked about photographic EQ and your awareness in the field. When you're on foot, even more so. From a photographic guide point of view, if I'm going to host a photographic safari where we're on foot, for example, monopoles, and I'll get to where you can walk in a second, but I'll take one camera, normally a 24-70. My focus then is to photograph and get images for the guest of themselves in the field, because it is not possible for me as a guide to get all those amazing shots while I'm on foot with a group of guests and worry about their safety, my safety. What could the animal do? What is the animal doing? So be aware, if you're a guest, just remember, or if you're in a group, just remember the awareness factor of how your perception through a lens changes the reality of what you're seeing. It's an important thing. So with all of that said, is it a great experience? Hell yes. It is an unbelievable experience to be on foot with big five, elephants, lions, and so on and so forth. There are some things that, like, I'm going back now. So when we used to guide, so all of my wild eye guides, let me start there, is trails guide qualified. What that means is you can be in South Africa a level 1, level 2, or level 3 FGASA guide. FGASA is the Field Guides Association of South Africa. So that's the levels up, 1, 2, 3. Obviously, you need more experience before you do 2, more experience before you do 3. But if you want to go on foot and guide in dangerous game areas, you have to have the trails guide qualification. One day, if you guys are keen, we can talk through what it takes and so on. But you have to have that qualification. All of my guides have it. Now, what this means is, where can you go on foot? There are some places that are more foot safari friendly, if you will, and that is more done. For example, monopoles in Zimbabwe comes to mind. That's where a lot of you, and I think, Shekin, this is where your question comes from, because we run a lot of safaris in monopoles where we go on foot. We've got hike, adventure trails. Monopoles itself kind of lends itself to going on foot, specifically for the elephants. Other areas like Madikwe and Sabi Sands, you can't just go on foot. You have to arrange with a local guide that you want to go on foot, but it's very possible if the qualifications are in place. So we can go on foot pretty much anywhere, but I will always, as a guide, I will look at the group dynamic, yeah? I will, on a photographic safari departure, a set schedule departure, where different people just join, I will more than likely never take that into the field on foot in certain areas, unless monopoles, because it's very open. It kind of lends itself. More likely on private guided trips is when I will get you out onto the floor, shooting low angles at animals, under the vehicle sometimes, depending on what we're looking at. And like the example, like I mentioned earlier, that Grant and I from a couple of years ago, that's the kind of stuff that we do more on private guided trips because it's smaller and it's better to control. And the awareness factor for me, I have to worry about one, two, maybe three people on a private guided trip, where on a group of six, it becomes more difficult and then you need backup. So from a safety point of view, that's something to consider. I'm just going to quickly go back to Chetan's message here for Tafari, sleeping in the open. There are not many places where you want to do this. Now, and I'm just going to carry on. How grueling is it? Recharging of batteries, food options for vegetarians. Those things can apply to a normal lodge as well. There are tented camps out there where you do not do walking. You do vehicle-based safaris, and they don't have options for vegetarians, for example. They don't have recharging systems, or they have like a communal charging area at the tent. How grueling is it? It depends. I mean, how long is a piece of string? We could walk, for example, for 100 meters and have an amazing rhino interaction on foot, or we can walk for 4 hours, not see a single animal. So how long is a piece of string is how grueling it is. Sleeping in the open is an interesting one. The one trip that Andrew and I used to run way back when we started Wild Eye was in the Thule block. And that was a particular one where we would, for one, it was a tented camp and we would run a workshop. It was actually a nice workshop, dedicated nature photography workshop with manuals and workshops and everything. Just on the sideline, I am wanting to bring that back. I want to dig back into the workshop, not a photo safari, a dedicated workshop. So stay tuned for that. And then on this Thule safari, one night we would go and sleep out in the open. It is absolutely magical. So what would you do is, this is in the Big Five. Well, there wasn't rhino at the time, but you would build a big fire, chairs around the fire, and then the stretchers, the camp would go and drop off for us around the fire. And you would sleep with your head in kind of if you look at it from the top, probably like a flower system. So everybody's got their heads in a circle. You play a little game and to determine who is on watch. And you then have an hour at a time. You wake up the next person, they're on watch. So just to be aware that nothing comes close. Lions, hyenas, and so on. The two things sleeping out, three things actually for me, that sleeping out in the open really is amazing, is number one is the night sounds. Now, that can also go for sleeping in a tented camp like Amara Camp Umlani, one of the lodges we use in Timavati. They've got open kind of type of room, bungalow type things, so you can hear the night sounds. That is amazing. The second part, sleeping outside under the stars for me, is if you wake up like 2, 3 in the morning, this is the romance that Africa kind of instills in people, is when you wake up in the middle of the night, you open your eyes, you've been fast asleep, you look up and it's just an explosion of stars above you and it's dead quiet. It's unbelievable. And then to kind of roll over, look towards the fire, which is just a small little fire glowing, that the mood of that whole environment is just absolutely, I almost get emotional. It's really, really something special. And then the third thing, so it's the night sounds, it's that middle of the night wake up. And then the next thing is waking up at about 3 or 4 in the morning, just when the sky starts turning color. When you go from pitch black into dark blues, and then day starting to break from there. That time as well. And you get the dawn chorus. That's the birds in the morning. The dawn chorus starting up. It is absolutely fantastic. So the experience of sleeping in the open is amazing. However, the majority, for example, monopools, I'm going to use that again because that's one of our trips, is you go walking all day, but you don't sleep in the open. You sleep in a tent. It's a very basic setup, but you still got the sounds. You just don't have the stars. If, for example, I know in the Mara, as well on the river. So there's always this dead time in the evening when you sleep. So the night sounds in the evening is amazing, up until about midnight, and then about from 3 o'clock again. But I don't know why, but from 1 to 3, there's this complete dead time in the bush where you hear absolutely nothing. But sometimes you might go out for a pee. The girls unfortunately have to stay in the tent because their little toilet is inside. But guys have the luxury, if we're going to call it that, to go outside. And if you just throw your head back and look up, it is unbelievable. So sleeping in the open, amazing. Safety on a safari and guns, we'll talk about that now. How grueling is it? It depends. I mean, again, you can walk gorillas, holy hell, that was very grueling. However, the next day's track wasn't that bad. I mean, I've been on foot in Big Five areas with guests and photographing where it was an absolute breeze and you don't realize how far or how long you've gone. Other days it's warm and hot and bothering and uphill. And so how long is a piece of string? Charging of batteries, again, this will depend on the operator you go with and what your infrastructure is. It's not like you just get dropped off at an airstrip and, hey, now you've got to live off the land. So there's normally infrastructure around it. And if you travel with me and my guides, we will always choose places and utilize operators that have the ability for us to charge batteries, because that's why we're there. We need to be able to do that. Food, again, I've been on foot safaris where the food and the kind of just everything around the food and the food and drink side of things is better than some five-star lodges. So again, it depends on the operator and the infrastructure that you choose to utilize on your on-foot safari. And that goes for options for vegetarians as well. Now, the guns you carry, does it guarantee safety? An on-foot safari experience is the definitive thing for me as to how we should guide as guides and how we as wildlife photographers in general should be approaching wildlife photography and wildlife. The idea, and when you do your Fugazi, your trails guide assessment, the last part of the whole thing is you have to walk an assessor and friends and family who trust you into two of the big five, view the animal, and leave. The goal, the ultimate, the full score, if you will, is to go into a sighting, view the animal, and leave without them knowing you're there. Because it's the same as wildlife photography. We should not, if you affect an animal's behavior, you have failed. If you do anything to affect an animal's behavior, you have failed. If you get too close and the lion runs away, you have failed. If you get too close to a leopard, it snarls at you, jumps down the tree and runs away, you have failed. If you get so close to an elephant that they shake their head and they want to step on you, you have failed. So from a safety point of view, on foot it's different because most animals will see you coming long before you even know they're there. However, it does happen that you come around a bush and two male lions who were fast asleep now suddenly realize, oh shit, here's Jerry and his guests. So in that instance, that is what the weapons are for. Now, I'm not going to discuss hunting and weapons and all those kind of things, but let me just put it this way. The weapons are there for safety of the guests. We are not obviously there to hunt. Let's not be silly about this. For me, having guided, I've done a lot of on-foot walks and guiding and stuff in my career, and the two worst moments of my career was on-foot hosting trails where I was guiding the people. Once was with a male lion and once was a female elephant, where in the field I had to chamber around and aim at the animal because they were charging. It is the, for me personally, it was the worst feeling in the world knowing that I might have to put an animal down because my guests' lives are at risk. Both instances were, we were walking, they didn't know we were there, we didn't know they were there, it was all dead quiet, and suddenly you're in that fight flight zone and something happens. So a gun does not guarantee safety, it's your final option. So you see people with guns out in the field and it's like all gung-ho and people want to pose with the pictures. That's all fun and stuff. It's there for our safety. Should the shit hit the fan? Now, if the shit hits the fan, 95% of the time, it's guiding error. The guide did something wrong. You weren't aware enough. However, it is the wild and anything is possible. So you never know what can happen. That's why the weapon is there. I mean, I remembered like yesterday having to chamber around. It was the only two times in a lot of guided walks on foot that I actually had to chamber around because it's gotten to that stage. First you shout, then you make noise, then wind gets all through the stages and you finally have to, I'm just, thank goodness these animals stopped in time, I didn't have to follow through. It's a bad feeling as a guide having to do that. However, that is one of the responsibilities we take when you go into the field with guests, is your safety is of paramount importance. There are certain things, for example, we will not walk into. If we go out and we find male lion tracks, for example, we'll track them. We'll go and look for them. If you walk and you find, for example, elephant tracks, you could go and try and find them depending on the environment again. So the guide will need to check, what's the wind doing? What's the environment doing? How thick is it? So there's a lot of variables that will affect how you approach the animals. If, for example, you find black rhino tracks, you're not going to track them. They're grumpy as hell, and you don't want to put yourself in that situation. If, for example, you see on foot, if you see a female lion's tracks with three very, very small sets of tracks next to it, you don't want to walk into a female lioness with brand new youngsters. If you know, for example, if you see a male and female lion walking together and you hear the sounds of mating, you don't want to walk into that. I mean, how would you feel if you're getting all funky in the bedroom and someone walks in? You're also going to want to beat them up. Okay, maybe a bad analogy, but you know what I mean. So there are certain instances where we will not, as guides, walk into certain things knowingly. However, the moment you put your feet on the ground, you never know what can happen. And that's why the weapons are there. It doesn't guarantee safety, but it's the final buffer. We have to have it. But again, to me, it was the worst thing ever having to chamber around on those two occasions. And thank goodness, touch wood, I didn't have to fire. Walking safaris. Is it a great experience? Yes, it is. Is it amazing for wildlife photography? Sometimes. Not always. Sometimes if we go on a walk, let's say we're doing a vehicle-based safari, some mornings after breakfast, we'll just go for a walk and people will take a 2470 along into the big five areas in case they see something, but it's more about getting out there. There are places, I think, where have I been on foot with people? Madikwe, Sobi Sands, in South Luangwa, in Mana Pools, Amboseli. So there are places where you can go on foot, but always will depend on a couple of things. I think the easiest way to break it down is, and it's the same with vehicle-based guiding, if you have an exit out of a sighting, normally two, forward and back, you're good. If you give the animal an exit route, normally two, you're good. It's when you get cornered or when an animal gets cornered, that's when shit can go downhill quickly. So it comes down to the guide's experience. Now, even though all my guides are super qualified to walk you, yeah, we would normally not guide, like carry the weapon when we go on safaris with you guys now, because we will get a local guide who's qualified. And make no mistake, we check nicely who we work with, but we will then work with them. So it's a double set of eyes, but we can focus on the guest experience. I can be the awareness factor for you while you're photographing, and then I've got Kevin in Mana Pools who does our trips there. He's worrying about the safety aspect, but you still have two qualified guides managing your experience for you. So I hope that adds a bit of value to you guys. It is amazing. I mean, we've got a couple of adventure trail products where we focus on walking, and yes, you can get amazing images, but again, it's not about the wildlife photography only. When you go on foot, it's about the experience of wildlife photography. On a vehicle, it should be as well. On foot, even more so. It really is cool. So if you guys ever do book a private guided trip with us, mention that you've heard this podcast and you would like to try an on-foot experience. Some people shit themselves. Literally, I've had people who come on safari and they want to go on safari and they want to go on foot. But then the moment you get out there, they realize, okay, whoa, wait, this is different. Yeah? I mean, I'll leave you with one more story from way back. We were guiding a trip. I was guiding a trip. I was still guiding full-time in Madikwe. And the morning we went on drive and we found a male lion mating with a female that we knew had a bunch of youngsters. I think there were four or five of them. Five. They were about a year and a half old. But she was now again mating with this male. It was all kind of weird. But we saw them mating. And then we drove 3-4 kilometers away and we found tracks for the youngsters. So we thought, hey, you know what? If these youngsters are in their own, then we should go walk into them. So we call into Parks Board and say to them, listen, I'm in this sector, this is where I am. We're going to go on foot, so many guests because of safety, and off we go. So we had an amazing experience. We tracked them from the road where we found the tracks for about, 15 minutes before we found them. So we found them on a kind of, there was a fallen over tree and these things were underneath it and they were half playing with each other. So remember, year and a half old, beautiful cats, but quite inquisitive. So initially, they kind of ducked down like a cat would do when they get a fright, and they looked at us, and we watched them for a while. So it was myself, Jono, 1, 2, 3, and three guests. 4 guests and myself. So we're looking at this beautiful sighting, we all stay together, and a little while later, we hear contact calling, still far off, of the female. Now, she's possibly coming back. So we thought, okay, cool, we've had a nice half an hour with these things on foot, watching them, and they were close. I mean, they're like 25, 30, 40 meters maybe up and down as they were going. So I said, okay, guys, let's go back to the vehicle. Vehicle was maybe 1 and a bit kilometers. So not a hell of a long way. So we started making our way. And Jono was with me, who's now one of my partners at Wild Eye. We're walking. So I'm walking ahead. And as we walk away, these young cats decide to follow us. So we're going down this game path. And they're going to like play/stalk mode as they're following us. It's brilliant. So, and they keep on coming quite close to the back person. So I said to Jono, listen, just stay on this game trail. I've walked with him many times. He's good on foot. He walks in front. I go to the back just in case. So we're now walking. And every once in a while, these cats keep on coming close. I'm talking like 5 meters. And they'll kind of half charge as a youngster. And then they'll back off again. It's like they play testing you. And with anything, that's why they say you shouldn't run. Because the only thing that runs away from predators is food. If you run, instinct kicks in. So we kept on going all the way back to the vehicle with five youngsters kind of half stalking, half attacking, half playing with us. I mean, it was a great experience. And I was so focused on the back to make sure that people are walking in the right direction. John is in front, so we know where we're going. That by the time we got back to the car, Paula, one of my guests at the time, was absolutely finished. The whole experience was quite intense. It was great. And look, when we after breakfast, we all had a nap because your adrenaline is kind of pumping. But it's that kind of stuff that can happen. It was very safe. It was managed properly. But the experience of being out there, you suddenly realize how human you are and that we're not really designed to be out there. When you see how these animals do what they do, man, if they had to drop you off in the bush and you have to live off the land, you're going to have a damn hard week ahead of you. So that's the kind of fun stuff that can happen. It is not always for everybody, but it is amazing. And I'm going to say it again. It's great to be able to photograph from foot. And there's some areas that definitely lends itself to it. And you can get amazing images. But it becomes more, the needle kind of swings towards the experience of wildlife photography on foot rather than purely the photography. Again, guys, it swings both ways. But definitely worth a try. Yeah, it's amazing. Anyway, Shetan, thank you so much. That was a great idea. I had this on my list, down the list on the podcast. But since you were one of the first questions to come in, there it is. I hope that helps. Keep on obsessing about your safari because it is so worth it. It's an amazing experience. Right, guys. As you know, I'm on all the social media channels. Look me up, Jerry van der Walt. If you have questions, comments on the podcast, if you have ideas for topics on the podcast, get in touch. If you want to plan a safari or plan a walking safari, get in touch. We'll make it happen. I always look forward to hearing from you and I will always try and respond. It's hard work, but we have to do this. That's what social media is about. As always, people, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your time. Wherever you are in the world, I will chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Have a good one.